Two airplanes. Same airline, same type. Same failure mode, 6 weeks apart. When you see a pattern like that, you stop calling it bad luck. This is Radio Hangar, I'm Tower, and this is ATIS, the show where we take the day's aviation headlines and turn them into something you can actually use in the cockpit. Today, we're leading with a story out of Russia. And I want to be clear up front about why a freighter overrun in the Siberian Arctic belongs in your headset on a Tuesday morning. Because the runway doesn't care what's painted on the tail. Physics is physics, and the mistakes that put a Boeing 737 off the end of a runway in Norilsk are the same mistakes waiting for you at the end of a wet 2,500-foot strip in your Bonanza. Here's what you need to know. Today's aviation news is brought to you by AviationSoul.com. Aviation Challenge coins built to mark the milestones, discipline, and pride behind every step in flight. From first solo to airline transport pilot, every coin tells a story. AviationSoul.com. Let's get into the headline itself, and then we'll take it apart. According to Aerotime, an S7 Airlines Boeing 737-800, configured as a freighter, overran the runway while landing at Norilsk in northern Russia. The aircraft came to rest past the end of the usable surface. And the reason this made the wire, the reason it isn't just a routine incident report buried in a database somewhere, is the timeline. This is the second runway overrun for the same airline, on the same aircraft type, in 6 weeks. Now, the headline doesn't tell the whole story, and I want to be careful here. As of this broadcast, the detailed investigation findings are not public. I'm not going to stand at this microphone and tell you I know the cause, because I don't, and neither does anyone else outside the investigators. When I move into interpretation, I'll tell you it's interpretation. That's the deal on this show, but I can tell you what an overrun is, why it happens, and what the recurrence of 2 in 6 weeks should tell any operator and any pilot who's paying attention. Let's start with the airport, because Norilsk is not an ordinary place to fly. Norilsk sits above the Arctic Circle. It is one of the northernmost cities on Earth with a functioning airline network, and the airport that serves it, Alakel, exists in an environment that is hostile to aviation for most of the year. We're talking about a place where winter runs long and hard, where blowing snow and ice are the default condition, and where the runway surface can go from adequate to treacherous in the span of a single weather cell. That matters, because when you land on a contaminated runway, snow, slush, ice, standing water, your stopping distance is not a fixed number, it's a variable. And it's a variable that can double, triple, or worse, depending on what's actually on the pavement versus what the crew believes is on the pavement. Hold on to that gap between what's actually there and what the crew believes, because that gap is where overruns live. So what is a runway overrun? Mechanically, it's simple to describe and brutal in practice. The airplane touches down and there is not enough remaining runway to bring it to a stop before the pavement ends. The airplane rolls off the departure end. Sometimes it stops in the overrun area. Sometimes it goes through the fence, sometimes. And this is why the industry takes it so seriously. Sometimes it finds a ravine, or a road, or water. An overrun is a landing distance problem, and landing distance is one of those things that every one of us learned for the check ride, computed carefully for exactly one afternoon, and then quietly stopped thinking about the moment we had a few hundred hours and a familiar home field. Let me pull this back to your airplane for a minute, because this is where it gets personal. When you did your private pilot training, you learned that landing distance depends on a stack of factors: your weight, your approach speed, the density altitude, the wind, the slope of the runway, and the condition of the surface. Every one of those factors can work for you or against you, and they don't add up politely. They multiply. Here's the one that bites people: approach speed. The numbers in your pilot operating handbook assume you cross the threshold at the right speed, the book speed, not 5 knots fast because it felt more comfortable, not 10 knots fast because there was a gust and you didn't want to get slow. The book speed, and here's the part that should make you sit up. Excess speed on approach does not cost you landing distance in a straight line. It costs you exponentially. A small percentage of extra speed over the fence translates into a much larger percentage of extra distance down the runway, because you carry that energy into the flare, you float, and every second you float is runway disappearing behind you at better than 100 feet per second in a light airplane, and much faster in a jet. Cross the fence 10% fast, and you can add 20% or more to your ground roll. Add a wet or contaminated surface on top of that, and the numbers stop being academic. They become the difference between the taxiway turnoff and the grass, beyond the numbers on the far end. This affects you if you fly into short fields. This affects you if you fly into fields that get wet or icy or snow-covered. And this affects you if you've ever told yourself quietly, that the book landing distance has a lot of margin built in, so you don't really need to run the numbers. That margin is thinner than you think, and on a contaminated runway, some of that margin has already been spent before you ever touch down. Now let's talk about the thing the S7 story is really about, whatever the specific causes turn out to be. Recurrence, one overrun is an event. Two overruns, same operator, same type, 6 weeks apart. That's a system telling you something. And in safety work, we have a name for the discipline of listening to that signal. We call it a safety management system, and every serious operator in the world is supposed to run one. The idea behind a safety management system is that you don't wait for the accident. You collect the small signals, the unstabilized approaches, the late touchdowns, the hard braking events, the crews who report they used more runway than they expected, and you look for the pattern before the pattern turns into an airplane in the weeds. A single overrun should trigger an investigation. A second one, in the same window on the same fleet, should trigger something much louder. It should trigger a hard look at training, at procedures, at the landing performance data. The crews are using at whether the go-no-go decision is being made honestly on approach. And here's the interpretation part, flagged as opinion because I promised I would. When you see two of the same failure in 6 weeks, the question is almost never one crew having a bad day. Good systems assume the crew is doing their best inside the environment the operator built for them. So the harder, fairer question is what in that environment made the same outcome likely twice? Was the landing performance guidance realistic for the runway conditions up there? Were crews getting accurate, timely braking action reports? Was there pressure, spoken or unspoken, to complete the landing rather than go around and divert? I don't know the answer for S7, but those are the questions a mature investigation will ask, and they're the questions any of us should ask about our own flying after a close call. Because you have a safety management system too. It's just a smaller one. It's the honest debrief you give yourself after a landing that didn't feel right. It's the entry you make in your own head when you floated halfway down the runway and told yourself you got away with it. The airlines write theirs down and staff it with departments. Yours runs between your ears. But the principle is identical. Two close calls of the same kind are not two accidents. They're one warning delivered twice. Let me give you the practical takeaways because that's what this show is for. First, compute your actual landing distance for the conditions you actually have, not the conditions you wish you had. If the runway is wet, use the wet numbers. If it's contaminated, and your aircraft has contaminated runway data, use it. And if it doesn't, understand that you are now operating in a region the manufacturer did not chart for you, and add margin accordingly. A dry sea level book number on an icy strip is not a plan, it's a hope. Second, fly the speed. The stabilized approach concept exists for exactly this reason. On final, you should be on speed, on path configured and settled, well before you reach the threshold. If you're fast, if you're high, if you're chasing the airplane back onto profile in the last few hundred feet, you're setting up the exact energy problem that puts airplanes off the end. And if you're not stabilized by your personal gate, whether that's 500 feet or 1,000 or wherever you draw the line, the answer is to take it around and try again. There is no trophy for salvaging a bad approach. There's just a shorter margin at the far end. Third, touchdown point discipline. The runway you have available to stop in starts at your wheels, not at the threshold. Every foot you float past the aiming point is a foot of stopping distance you gave away for free. Land in the touchdown zone or don't land. On a long dry runway, you can be sloppy about this and never pay for it. On a short one or a contaminated one, the touchdown point is the whole game. Fourth, and this is the one that ties the whole story together, believe the runway, not the schedule. Whatever pressure exists to complete a landing, get the freight there, get the passengers to the gate, get home before the weather closes in. That pressure has never once made a runway longer. The runway is whatever length it is, the surface is in whatever condition it's in. And your airplane will stop where physics says it stops, not where the timetable wants it to. Now, I want to zoom back out, because there's a bigger context here that's worth naming. The Boeing 737-800 is one of the most common airliners on the planet. There are thousands of them flying, in passenger and freighter configurations, in the hands of hundreds of operators in every climate humans fly airplanes in. The airplane itself is a known, mature, well-understood machine, so when a specific operator has a specific recurring problem with it, the airframe is rarely the story. The story is the operation around the airframe. The training, the procedures, the maintenance, the way decisions get made when the weather is bad and the runway is short and everyone wants to be on the ground. That's a lesson that scales all the way down to us, because your Cessna 172 or your Piper or your Cirrus is also a known, mature, well-understood machine. When one of them ends up off the end of a runway, it is almost never because the airplane did something surprising. It's because the operation around it, the planning, the speed control, the go-around discipline, the honest assessment of the runway, broke down somewhere on the approach. The machines are reliable. It's the decisions that get us. Let me flag one more thing as opinion before we close, because I think it needs saying. It is easy when a story like this comes out of a faraway airline in a harsh place to file it under someone else's problem. Different regulator, different climate, different flying entirely. But the Overrun doesn't know any of that. The Overrun is the single most democratic accident in aviation. It happens to student pilots on their first solo, and it happens to seasoned freight crews above the Arctic Circle. And it happens for the same handful of reasons every single time. Too fast, too long, too much energy, too little runway. And a decision to land that should have been a decision to go around. Read the story that way, and it stops being someone else's problem. It becomes a checklist for your next approach. That's the news. My thanks to AeroTime for the reporting on the S7 overruns, and a reminder that the formal cause findings aren't out yet. So, hold your conclusions loosely until the investigators do their work. You can find us anytime at radiohanger.com. Go run your landing numbers before your next flight. Not the book's numbers, yours. This is Tower. Fly the speed, respect the runway, and I'll see you on the next one.